Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. I'll continue this evening on the theme of mindfulness of breathing and move into the last tetrad of the from the discourse on mindfulness of breathing. And this it's the last tetrad of the 16 stages of mindfulness of breathing is really about the, it sort of lines up with the, in terms of the four foundations of mindfulness, it lines up with the Dhammanupassana section of the Satipatthana, the last section of the Satipatthana, and concerning the mental states, aspects of insight in particular. So that this is in a certain way is a culmination of the foundations that we've been laying in the mindfulness of breathing. That the say, in terms of the whole structure of the Buddha's teachings, it culminates in insight, culminates in understanding. The whole purpose of the path of practice in the Buddha's teachings is to bring us to a point of insight and understanding. And you know, all of the foundation that we lay is very essential, but it's good to recognize that it is for a purpose. And there's many discourses that the Buddha talks about these different aspects of, say, laying a foundation of a path. But it's for a particular goal. They say one of the famous discourses, of course, is the discourse on the raft. The simile of the raft, where the one is on say on this shore, which is dangerous, is fraught with difficulty, and one builds a raft with whatever is at hand. Sticks and twigs and branches and things that float, ties them together, and through the strength of one's arms and legs goes across the water and gets to the other shore, which is a shore of safety. And you know, one leaves the raft at that at that shore and goes up onto the bank in a place of safety. And the Buddha gives that as a, say the say the this shore being the that dukkha, and crossing the water, the expanse of water, as being the path of practice of training, and being able to reach the other shore of Nibbana. So that there's this, one creates say this path and relies on it, depends on it, in order to get across to a place of safety. And same in, say, the Anapanasati, laying these foundations of mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, feelings of the mind, and of the aspects of insight. These are the they're a part of the, say, the path that we're having to rely on. There's another discourse where the Buddha goes through the various aspects of the training, and saying that, well, this is not, say, this is not the what it's all about. It's in the sense of it's not for gain, honor, and fame. It's not for the benefits of virtue and goodness. It's not for the benefits of mindfulness and clear comprehension. It's not for the benefits of samadhi and peace. It's not for the benefits of insight and wisdom even, but it's for the sure heart's release. And but that insight, you know, is obviously playing a role in the in this path, this progression of training. And it builds on these other aspects. So that we're in the mindfulness of breathing, we've been laying this foundation of peace, of mindfulness, of a degree of understanding of how the feelings and mind actually work. Now it's time to sort of turn and shine the light of insight onto the process of breathing and the process of being attentive to breathing, attending to the breath. So that the first quality to be attentive to is the quality of impermanence. Investigating impermanence, I breathe in. Investigating impermanence, I breathe out. So, starting to take this characteristic of impermanence as the basis for investigation, attending closely to the quality of change. And the breath is an obvious candidate for investigating impermanence, because it is always changing. We're always having to breathe in and breathe out. We can't just sort of decide to stop breathing so that we don't have to bother with things. And impermanence is it's how things actually function, worry. Everything is impermanent. Everything is changing. The elements of insight are, I mean, say impermanence is the first one that we are attentive to. And this whole section can sort of be encompasses all of the other aspects of the say characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self, aspects that are the heart of the vipassana, the insight practice. So that and impermanence is kind of the doorway in, and tends to be the more common or the more predominant, the more noticeable characteristic. But as soon as you start investigating impermanence, then you start recognizing that the other qualities are folded into that. You know, the reason why, on a certain level, the reason why things are unsatisfactory is because they change, they become something other, they become something else. You can't ever make it stable so that it will always satisfy, be there for you. You just can't have you can't have a permanent condition. And you can't sort of make things be stable. You know, if we had that power. And that's a sort of the sense of not self. You know, the reason why things are not self is because we don't really have the power to make things be stable. Therefore, we're not really in control. And this is an aspect of the say, when we talk about the insight into that constitutes the insight into or characterizes the insight into entering the stream of Dhamma. The yang kinche samudaya dhammang sabantang nirodha dhammang, which whatever has the nature to arise, that has the nature to cease. And this is the insight that when we talk about somebody who has entered the stream, has had the insight that sort of makes that shift from the worldly realm into the realm of transcendence and liberation. That is the characteristic. Whatever is of the nature to arise, that is of the nature to cease. So that is an insight into impermanence. But it's also maybe it's important to recognize that it's a bit more profound than that, in that one is also recognizing the conditioned nature of things. That seeing as a part of that insight into impermanence is also the recognition that how conditioned everything is. And everything exists because of conditions, whatever is of the nature to arise, that has the nature to cease, whatever. So this the nature of conditioning, all things are dependent on conditions. And because they're dependent on conditions, then they're always fraught with, say, contradictory conditions being very much a part of that. So there's always this tension involved, and the tension is dukkha, and the tension is suffering, the tension of wanting to be gratified and satisfied, but then things always falling apart, changing. Wanting to be happy and content and peaceful, but that relies on so many conditions that it's always just sort of out of one's grasp. There's always some other condition that's part of that. That sets up a dissonance, and that is the nature of unsatisfactoriness, of dukkha. And we're always trying to perfect things. We always want things perfect, so that we're always suffering. That's not news. We know that, but the response is always, well, if only I could get it right, or I must have it wrong somehow. So we neglect to sort of recognize that inherent unsatisfactoriness, the inherent dukkha factor, so that we get stuck on this shore with danger, difficulty, and dukkha, and that impermanence is also, say the reason why the anicca, also that non-self is a part of that, because that which is impermanent, changing, dependent on conditions, it is just that. It is completely dependent on conditions. There is no independent quality of self, of me, of mine, that is able to be separated out from that and can be independent. It's just not possible. And that's very liberating, it's very freeing to sort of recognize that. Because there's the feeling, the feeling of the ordinary unenlightened being is that there is some sort of independent me or self, or me the watcher, me the observer, me the experiencer, me the controller and commander of things. And when that me is trying to be in control, then that me is suffering miserably. But that's seeing that whatever is of the nature to arise, that is of the nature to cease. That also enfolds this insight into non-self as well. But that doorway into the realm of insight is the anicca-anuppassī. So investigating impermanence, I breathe in. Investigating impermanence, I breathe out. Taking that impermanence, change, as a focal point for attending closely, watching, investigating, and you can be attending to that in the whether it's on the physical level of the breath, to just attend to the sensation of the breath coming in. They're recognizing how it just each in-breath is changing from the immediate contact of the sensation touching the tip of the nose. There's the change taking place of the breath coming in, the feeling of the sensation moving in the body, the nuances of temperature, of cooling as the breath comes in, the touch of point different points, the feeling of kind of either the softness or the hardness, harshness of the sensation. There's this whole range of changing experience on just the in-breath. And even in the point of as we finish the in-breath and there's a gap there, it isn't as if that's a static piece of nothingness. I mean, there's a change happening all the time. Just moment to moment, subtle changes of the feeling of tension in the body, the feeling of just on a physical level, not even considering the realm on the mental level what's happening. But then as we begin breathing out, there's that attending to the subtle changes and trying to see change more clearly as that an arising and ceasing of changing sensation. And you're allowing the mind to try to settle on the sensation. So like moving into the sensation of the breath. Feeling the sensation of the body. Attending closely to the feeling of the actual posture. Now, however one wants to watch, observe, experience, feel the on the physical level, what is changing, what is impermanent, what is shifting, what is moving, all of that is aspects of impermanence. And seeing it from, especially in terms of a basis for insight, really starting to experience it from a place of just change, just the body changing, just the sensation changing, rather than the attempts to make it be how one wants it to be, trying to say, I should be trying observing the breath at a particular point, it should be like this, it should be flowing, it should be, it doesn't have to be anything because it's changing. Observe and be attentive to what the experience actually is. And at whatever point is observable or somewhat clear for one. Because that's changing as well. Sometimes it's clear at the tip of the nose. Sometimes it's clear sort of at the back of the palate. Sometimes it's clear or more observable in the diaphragm area or down at the lower abdomen. But that's impermanent also. So you don't have to sort of fix it at a point and then fret about it that it has to be there. Give, this is taking impermanence as the theme, the basis. And that, and I think this is where one also is recognizing the, there's the impermanence on the physical level, the impermanence on the mental level, the how the mind actually is relating to the breath. Mindfulness. How do we establish the mindfulness on the breath? Well, it is impermanent. The mind is shifting and changing, and this is why that working with vitakka vichara is so important. Ajahn Tanisaro's translation of vitakka vichara, I think, is really very, very useful, because he translates it as directed thought as vitakka, and vichara as evaluation. So that one is taking for granted or recognizing clearly, there is this impermanent. The sense, the physical sensation is impermanent. The mind is shifting and changing. So that to recognizing that, directing with attention and mindfulness, that vitakka, that directed thought, directing the thought at the sensation, directing the thought at the particular feeling that is arising. And then that evaluation, that is staying with that, is sticking with it, is following through. And so that picking a particular point or recognizing a particular point of experience, and then that evaluation, not watching the subtle changes that take place, and not to be thrown off by those changes, but sustaining that vichara, that evaluation, sustaining the awareness, not in a forced way, but because things are impermanent, then you recognize you don't have to force it to be constantly stable and steady and unchanging. But that vichara, it is sort of supporting the awareness that follows change. So that the steadiness comes from that vichara. And then when the vichara is impermanent, when it starts to shift, when it starts to seek another object, or another object distracts it in some way, then one recognizes, well, that it's impermanent. What was impermanent is showing its impermanence. And that vitakka, lifting up directed thought to that recognition of impermanence, and then the re-establishing of attention on the object of meditation, and that can, the breath, or the recognition of impermanence. Oh, that was impermanent. How do I return to that place of awareness and stability? And which are evaluating the quality of our attention, evaluating the and sustaining attention on that particular feeling. As we work with impermanence and change like that, one of there's a characteristic of the kind of concentration or settledness that is, the Buddha talks about as a result of the attending to impermanence, but also is actually a basis for the insight or vipassana practice. And that is animitta samadhi, so that the samadhi is based on it's animitta means sort of like signless, because it's taking impermanence as the object, then it's not being drawn into the characteristics of things. It's not being drawn into the change for change's sake, but it's seen through. Okay, impermanence, that which is impermanent has to be impermanent, and the mind settles in a composed state that is then able to not be drawn into the characteristics of things. It goes to a signless animitta, not going to the signs, characteristics, markers that normally are part of the say conscious experience of things, or unconscious even. But it's seeing through those characteristics, so the mind becomes very settled in a because it's not drawn into those the nimitta, the marks, the characteristics. I mean, nimitta is also said like when we mark our robes for make a stain on them and call it, do the that's also called a nimitta, say like when we do our bintu, when we determine our robes, we have to mark them. And one of them, they say the marks that we make, three little marks on a new robe, those are also called nimitta as well. So the marks, signs, as well as nimitta in terms of, say like a nimitta, say a nimitta of light that comes up in meditation, sometimes like an image that comes up in meditation, or could be a light, could be full-blown characters. But anyamita is there's not holding to those signs, marks, images, and is able to then establish itself on the quality of awareness itself. So that this investigation of impermanence, it's very key to the Buddhist teachings, but it has more, say it has more implications than just the impermanence, just sort of, oh, that's impermanent, that's impermanent, that's impermanent. It's sort of really taking it in and really seeing the implications of that. And Ajahn Chah used impermanence a lot in his teaching. And you know, one of the ways he also talked about it was just not as, you know, to fill out its implication is sort of the unsure nature of things, the uncertain nature of things. Because that tendency of the mind to want things to be sure, to be certain. Seeking stability and security in the physical or the mental realm. Endlessly, you know, we frustrate ourselves by trying to do that. But when we can be clear and content, it's an unsure thing, it's uncertain. You know, whether it's, you know, some sort of desire that comes up in the mind, or some sort of fear, some sort of worry, and to be able to see that in its impermanent, uncertain light, then the mind doesn't hold to it, grasp it. It doesn't proliferate around it, because one accepting its impermanence, and one sees through its changing nature. So in a mental realm, the seeing of that impermanent, uncertain nature, whether it's a feeling, a perception, a mental formation, even the act of consciousness itself, this is changing, it's uncertain, it's impermanent. And this is the base of insight, is sort of say seeing nama rupa as impermanent. When we see all whatever is of form, whether it's internal or external rupa, whether it's the body, our own personal rupa form, whether it's anything external to us, we're really seeing that impermanent, changing nature. And of course, again, that tapping into the breath, which is extremely impermanent. That's the first clue. And the nama, all those aspects of the jitta, of the mind, all the moods, all the feelings, sensation of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, all the thoughts, whether they're wise or foolish, it's really seeing those there in the light of impermanence. You know, not creating a sort of a an evaluation of things. That was a wise thought, therefore it's good. I must be a wise person. It was just an impermanent wise thought. It's no big deal. Foolish, kind of off the wall, stupid, idiotic thought. That's all it was. What was that? Impermanent, changing, idiotic thought. Have them all the time. But it's really seeing it from the ground of impermanence. And as soon as one sees that, you realize, well, it was just a thought. Why do I have to make a big deal out of that? And so that, again, that's where it starts to show itself. The impermanence starts to show itself in the other aspects of the traditional elements of insight. That the dukkha element. When one sees through dukkha, then the concentration that arises or one develops is called apanahita samadhi. The apanahita meaning desireless. And desireless samadhi, or non-hankering, non-aiming, it's not looking for anything. And you can imagine a mental state, a mind state that isn't looking for anything else. You know, we're always, it's just that we're pushed by desire, looking for something. It's like it's like a dog. You see these dogs sort of sniffing all the time, looking for something gratifying, looking for something interesting, looking for something just because there's nothing else to do. It's not sort of not sniffing around looking for some other thought to follow, to some other thought to think, some other experience to experience, some other we're like dogs following our noses all the time, and it's desire pulling us. So that apanahita samadhi, that desireless samadhi, the samadhi, and these are also called the vimokas, liberations, the animitta vimoka, the liberation of through the signless, apanahita vimoka, the liberation through desirelessness. And so that mental state, the mind of peace, of samadhi, of concentration, that is grounded in a non-hankering, non-moving to the tune of desire, and to actually really work with that, as we breathe in. Really, what would it be like to breathe in without desire, without hankering, without aiming for anything other than just to breathe in? Not evaluating, not measuring, not trying to make it be something other than it is. And to breathe out with just that quality of desirelessness. To bring it up as a contemplation, how to do. And to try to allowing the the heart to settle into that quality of desirelessness, what would it be like? And you know, obviously that, and then it's impermanent, but it, you know, returning to that, bringing attention to it, attending to that heart of desirelessness. Non-wanting, non-craving, non-seeking, apanahita samadhi. And you know, when we accept impermanence, oh, things are the change, the uncertainty, the impermanent nature of things, then we can rest in that quality of non-desiring much more, because this is the way things are. And again, it's I've always found it helpful to this using of the vitakka vichara, lifting up, directing thought to a quality of a particular quality of mind. And then evaluating, what's that feel like? What's the tone? What's the result? What comes into the mind? What comes into the mind when we bring up a quality of desirelessness as a possibility? I mean, sometimes what happens, it comes up as just, you know, absolute sort of resistance. No way am I going to be desireless. And, you know, the mind sometimes just balks. But other times it's just really, oh, wow, it opens up a possibility of escape, of peace. It opens up a possibility of real, you know, vimokkha, of liberation. It's a liberating quality of being able to be present with just attention and awareness, with knowing, and not have to be looking for anything else, not desiring anything. So the panahitta vimokkha, the panahitta samadhi, the developing of that meditation and concentration, settledness of mind. Because it isn't just to say that this quality of samadhi and insight, they're not just things that pop up out of nowhere. That also has conditions. It's like setting the conditions for the mind to experience composure, peace, one-pointedness. Sunyata samadhi. This is the traditional, say, counterpart of anatta. On the experiential level, is emptiness, sunyata. And it's not an emptiness of voidness. It's when we really experience things from a point of non-self, not frantically trying to prop up an I, a me, a being, but just recognizing conditions as conditions. This is a physical condition. This is a condition of physicality. This is a condition of mentality. These are nama, these are rupa. This is a impermanent changing condition. This is just a condition. And so just as one sees it from that perspective, then one starts seeing the empty nature of it. It's empty of an abiding essence, and empty of a focal point of selfhood. It's just conditions. And that has again, that has a liberating quality to it, has a peaceful quality to it. And giving ourselves the opportunity to enter into and abide into that quality of emptiness. So this is, it's not a, let's say, a metaphysical emptiness. This is an experiential emptiness. Recognizing impermanence, recognizing change, recognizing condition nature of things, being conditioned. And recognizing that there is a, say, there's a an ability of the mind to see that clearly and to see through it without creating anything else, anything other. And that's our place of abiding. Let's see. Investigating impermanence, I breathe in. Investigating impermanence, I breathe out. Just coming back to that very simple base, that very simple foundation. We're breathing, the breath is changing. But it's giving us a clue, it's giving us an opportunity to penetrate and to relinquish, to see through. So that they turning our attention to the, say, the insight elements of breath meditation. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.